Hey everybody, this is Brooksy here, or as you call Palpatine. I'm here with Tanner, and we are doing a new segment called The Game Corner. Today we're going to be talking about a real well-known game that everyone, a lot of people have played in the past, and recently with its re-release and remaster of what I will say the Legendary Edition.
We're talking Mass Effect, ladies and gentlemen, a game that we've hinted about on our mainline show and that Corey refuses to play, even though, you know, I think he didn't play it.
Hence why he's not here today, because, you know, he's missing out, and until he plays it, he can't really talk about it. So maybe on the next game that we discuss, he'll be on.
We'll see. He's got no taste in video games, so...
Yeah, he pretty much likes Batman and Batman.
It's Batman and Lego. That's like all of it.
That's true. So for this game, IGN, which I'm going to use as like our basis for rating. If you on Twitter under Dorkside Nexus want to use a different format, please let us know, whether it's on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. More than welcome to use a different rating system. IGN's rating is a 9.4 on the trilogy as a whole. So, Tanner, what do you think the rating is, like, from 1 to 10?
I mean,
10 being, like, really good.
My personal rating would probably be a 9.8. Like, it's damn near perfect. The game is damn near perfect in my eyes. And I mean, when I say the game, I mean... The original trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely would give it a 9.8 as well. I mean, don't get me wrong, games, they have bugs, they have glitches when they first come out or after they're out for a while. Updates are released and then something comes up and it happens. But, like Tanner says... It's damn near perfect. It's a really well done game.
And those 0.2 points come off for me on the first game simply because of how much inventory you have to manage and driving the Mako. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I agree. The second game, they definitely polished up a lot of the game as a whole in regards to mechanics and side quests, including just the plot itself. It took like a whole new take on different, like a different enemy in a sorts.
And this isn't to take anything away from the first game, because that first game was spectacular. It's by far, when it came out in 2007, that's around the same time that BioWare was doing Dragon Age, and you could see a lot of the carryover but you can see where BioWare was at that time. And then when you move on into the later games of Mass Effect, you get a little bit more streamlined, very similar to what they were doing over on the Dragon Age end, because the Mass Effect games were the first ones to introduce that dialogue wheel. And up to a point, BioWare had always been doing it very much like they did with KOTOR or in Dragon Age Origins, where, you know, you get the dialogue from the NPC, and then you have a big list to pick from, and you never hear the speech of it. So that's Mass Effect was the first BioWare game to instill that.
Which is good, because they're learning from themselves, whether it's maybe one team focuses more on the Dragon Age aspect and the Mass Effect does their own thing as well. But it's good to see that they're learning from each other and they're able to improve based upon how one game operates and bring it to another.
Yeah.
And that's good, because it just creates more of diversity in a game as a whole.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This was, in my opinion, BioWare's crowning achievement was the Mass Effect games, the original trilogy. And that's saying something, because we all know my favorite game of all time is KOTOR.
Yeah. Yeah. And you stressed that quite a lot on the main podcast. And I think Corey has said it a few times. Okay, I get it. I see what you're saying.
So I'll keep saying it. I'll keep saying it.
All right.
The boy needs to learn. He needs to learn his lesson. Daddy's got a lesson for you. Come here.
Now, when you typically play the game, what type of path do you go? Do you go Paragon or Renegade?
Paragon. I can't do Renegade. There's times where I do it just like because it fits the moment, but overall it's Paragon because I also know how BioWare has made their games, and the best endings always end up being when you follow the good path.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think with some of the choices, because this is something I feel Mass Effect did great, is the choices in the game, because they have lasting ramifications throughout the entire trilogy.
Yep. And I think this is like the only one game to date that does that.
I feel like others have tried.
They have tried, but I don't think it's quite where it is with Mass Effect in their system. But what I do like about it, though, is that if you do something in one, it could affect you all the way until the third game.
And BioWare did try to make that a thing that happened in the Dragon Age series. Your choices from Origins, they can have very, like, the first game gives you so many choices in it, and the ending can change in so many ways. But when you get to the second game, those choices don't have as much ramifications. And then in the third game, they instilled Dragon Age Keep, which you could basically go onto BioWare's site and create the story that you wanted to play and load it into your game. Which was cool, but it doesn't have a ton of doesn't have that same feel as Mass Effect, where it really affects what's going on.
Right. I never really played Dragon Age, or at least I believe I only really played the first one. So it's been such a long time since I've played it. Maybe I'll have to play it again at some point. Dragon Age series.
I think it's worth it. It's not as good as Mass Effect. I'll sit there and die on that hill. And I didn't play Mass Effect when I was younger. I came to it when Legendary Edition came out, and I got obsessed.
Now, we talked a little bit about it on our main podcast about how you had mentioned you did the Vindicator. Path or Infiltrator. I should say class selection. Infiltrator class. And do you remember and want to talk a little bit about that in a little bit more greater detail? Like it's like why you like that class specifically.
So there was a part of me that really wanted to roll as like a biotic, or I think it's Vanguard is the subclass, or Sentinel. Well, I can't remember. It's one of those two is the subclass with it. But my problem with it is biotics are described basically as this universe's mages, and mages are just always so squishy. And in the first game, I went Infiltrator because of the sniper rifle ability. The proficiency with sniper rifles and pistols, because typically, when I play a game, I usually always go with pistols, assault rifles, or sniper rifles, depending on the game, SMGs, but I'll hardly ever roll the shotgun. I just hate having to be up in the center of everything. I want to be able to move around the back end of the battlefield and take people out. I think that was the biggest reason, was the sniper. And just looking at the stats of some of the pistols, it was like, I don't really need the assault rifle. I can just roll with this.
Did you use any other weapons that you found more of a favorite than the sniper rifle, or did you just believe that the sniper rifle was
it
your best gun?
it needs to be nerfed. The snipers needed to be nerfed in Mass Effect, like all the way through the series, even some of the weaker guns, like the, oh my God, which one is it? I can't remember. It doesn't deal the most damage, but it has the biggest mag. Oh my God. I can't remember it. Anywho, that was like, once I unlocked that sniper rifle in the second game, that was just it. Because mag size was much bigger and it was just more versatile for me.
Okay.
What was I your personally,
so I usually did, I believe it was Vanguard. It was just the regular soldier, no biotic ability, just the typical run and gun or cover and gun type of Shepard.
Yeah, and that's got the some of the technician stuff in that build, doesn't it?
Yes. And I don't think they really did too much with it because it was just such a basic class. But I think you had more grenades. You did more damage with like assault rifles, and you're able to really, you're really able to sit in cover for a long time without having to worry too much about like getting hit or hindered. And I personally, my personal weapon was definitely the M7 Lancer. I just prefer it. It's basic. I did use that. As well as on occasion, the Kane and the Cerberus Harrier. I did, however, like that when you were doing some missions on, believe it was in 3, you could get the, I think it was called like the Black Hole Gun. It's just basically what the Reapers used. It was like a miniaturized version of it. And you could only use it like, I believe, 3 times.
Yeah.
And then it would time out and then you couldn't use it no more. But just being able to use it and just hearing that like, pew, and then just watch a whole line of enemies just explode and then just catch fire was just incredible.
Yeah, I don't know. I think for me, when I ran Infiltrator, it was very much, I also like being, you know, drop into stealth, move around the battlefield and take a headshot at somebody and go. That was really what I liked about it. But I stuck with that class all the way through. I have since gone back and played it. And I rolled it again because I was like, I'm going to try something different. I'm like, I'm just going to stick with what I know.
Yeah, definitely stick with something that's like in your comfort zone. You don't want to like, you don't want to over, I mean, I guess it's good to try something new, but I don't know. Stick to your guns. Definitely stick to your guns. What was your initial thought when you first played 1?
My initial thought. So I went into it on Legendary Edition. So I went into it knowing it was an older game that had been remastered. So I didn't have the highest of hopes. I'd heard great things about the games and stuff like that, but I didn't have the highest of hopes because I knew it was a remastered game. And I loved that. I loved that game. I mean, it's definitely the weakest of the trilogy, but what I think I liked the most was the story of what the story was in that game. The stakes were so real from the moment you start playing that game.
Yeah, they set it up. It's the first one does start off a little slow. You're not really sure how everything's going, and you're kind of just like, who's the big bad here? Like, what's going on? And you're just thrusted right into a battle, and you got to start making decisions right away.
Yeah. And
so
they set it up very interestingly with how they introduce Saren and what it means that Shepard is not being nominated to be a Spectre. Especially once you read the Codex entries. Oh my God. I think that was part of it is I was reading. Whenever I start a game, I typically dive into the Codex as I get the entries. And the lore is just insane. And I think that helped dive into it because helped me dive into it because it showed me what the stakes were, what it actually meant for humanity. And then once you find out, like, oh shit, we have to stop Saren, it's like, okay, this is real now.
What was your first initial thought of seeing a Reaper?
Didn't know, like, what to think.
What, like, you weren't like, oh, this doesn't seem too bad, or like, we as a whole, as a galaxy, are screwed.
Well, it doesn't. I went with it didn't seem too bad because the way a Reaper is introduced is it's Saren's ship.
That's true.
So at first, it's not until you get to his lab where he's trying to breed more Krogan and you talk with Sovereign that the stakes are really put in front of you. And so up until that moment, I'm like, oh, we just got to stop Saren. And then you talk to Sovereign, you're like, oh shit, this is going to be dope.
Yeah, it gets definitely intense as the game goes along. And then especially when you go to the Citadel for the first time and you start meeting with like the council, and everything just gets like, it steadily gets like more and more intense in the first game.
Oh, absolutely. I have a question for you right off the bat. When you first played that game, don't even think about 2 and 3. What did you think of Udina the first time you met him?
I don't think I really liked him.
Right off the bat, my instinct was like, this motherfucking politician, I'm going to take this pen and just shove it through his eyes.
Because, like, when I was hearing the different leaders on the council, and they were like, I was like, all right, well, he's making a good point, she's making a good point, and he's making a good point. And then, like, Udina will say something, and I'm like, how are you on this council? You're representing humanity. You are literally screwing us over. Yeah, well, how can you say stuff like that?
But at that point, he wasn't a council. He was just Earth's representative to the Citadel.
Oh.
Yeah. Because Earth doesn't get a council seat until after the first game. And they always give us the choice after the first game of Udina or Anderson. And I'm like, Anderson, because fuck Udina.
Yeah, yeah, definitely Anderson earned that title. I mean, come on. Anderson is Keith David, so having quote-unquote Arbiter as our representative for humanity on an alien, you know, a giant alien spacecraft, it's what you want.
I also wanted to talk about something. Right off the get-go, they introduced the whole idea of the Protheans being this ancient civilization that all of this technology we have is based off of. And again, going back to that lore building, oh my God, like, they just put it right in front of us. And they're like, we're going to learn more about that, these characters and stuff like that. And then they use that as an arm to introduce my favorite companion / love interest, Liara. And just like, they roll with it, and you get a lot of information about the Protheans. They're still mysterious, but you learn that the relays, the Citadel, it's all believed that the Protheans were the ones that created it, and they just went extinct.
Yep. And then as you progress, the story and the lore change, especially in regards to getting to the third game.
Oh.
Everything is completely flipped upside down, that like, the Reapers and the Citadel have been around for a lot longer than the Protheans. And it's just been this constant cycle of letting sentient life get, you know, spacefaring and get crowded. And then the Reapers just come right on through.
Yeah.
To try and find, unite the galaxy through synthesis.
It's a really wild concept. And you and I have talked about this a little bit, that I feel in the world of science fiction, I feel like Mass Effect might be some of the most believable science fiction at a lot of points. It's still all fiction and fantasy, but there's a lot. It feels like they put a lot of thought into explaining, you know, things like biotics, like the Mass Effect relays, and AI and all of this different stuff. And I think that's what's so amazing about this game.
Do you think that the Reapers initially had a good cause? Like, so maybe like the first two cycles, like millions and millions of years ago. Do you think that at one point they had a good cause to, I guess you could say, try to find the best purpose?
I feel like it's one of those, the ends doesn't justify the means.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
No, it does, because I think that in a sense that these Reapers robots are essentially trying to, in a sense, clean the galaxy and just create a more utopian Milky Way.
Yeah, it's really strange. I did have a question for. Let's move along into the Mass Effect stuff with going into 2. When you played 2 the first time, did you expect Shepard to be killed within 5 fucking minutes of the game opening?
It was a serious curveball. And I wasn't expecting it to be like that intense right off the bat, and then just come to find out, like, while they're doing like the opening credits, he's really just a clone.
Yeah, I mean, he's not even I don't even know if we can call him a clone, because from what the way it is described, it's he's a clone, but. At the same time, it's like they used his original body to, like, and just rebuilt it so that they could get the same consciousness back. It's just so wild. I think that the second one definitely is a huge curveball in the series, because the overarching threat is still the Reapers that are introduced in the first game, but the device that gets us to them is the Collectors. And that's like what we're...
Right.
The biggest flaw is, not flaw, that's who our biggest rival is we're up against the Collectors the whole time, and we're using the terrorist organization Cerberus to basically fund it.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, terrorist for, I guess you could say, alien or
Xeno
species. Yeah,
they're still terrorists.
They're very, very, very pro-human, like no aliens.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, which is, you know, all under the control of the Elusive Man.
Who?
What were your thoughts? What were your thoughts on seeing him for the first time?
Honestly, I wasn't like. He served a purpose in the second game, and I get that. In the third game,
yep.
I understand why he plays such a big role in it, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't care about you. I really don't, because I know I'm going to kill you, because that's just basically how all video games progress, is I am going to get to kill you.
Yeah.
And I will not hesitate to make that choice. I don't know. I think the second game, though, is really cool, because we're still fighting the same fight. We just have to do it in a more of a runaround sort of way, because we're not really part of the different council species and whatnot. We're not doing it under their guise. We're doing it with Cerberus, who's a shunned organization, essentially. And Cerberus is definitely one of those things where they do, in a way, have the right mindset for the greater good, but it's for the greater good of humanity, not the galaxy.
Right. It's to benefit just everyone who's on Earth.
It's very Dumbledore and Grindelwald-esque for the greater good, but that greater good is for humans, not everyone else. Or in Harry Potter world, it's for wizards, not everyone else.
Right.
So, right. I don't know. I love the second game, though. They streamlined that inventory system. They were like, listen, we're only going to give you a handful of guns this time. You were like, we know it was too much. Handful of guns. We're going to introduce some kind of cool characters. I'm sorry. Like, as much as I simp for Liara, Miranda's a babe. Miranda is a babe.
Yeah, she does. Can't go wrong with her in that jumpsuit.
They knew what they were doing. They knew what they were doing when they designed that.
Oh, character. They definitely were doing. They were like, well, we got to make somebody who's eye candy. Oh, I guess we'll create Miranda.
Yeah, because Ashley, her whole personality made her so she wasn't eye candy in the first game. I'm like, girl, I want to punch you in the mouth.
Yeah, she was very anti-alien.
Yeah. Speaking of which, the two playthroughs I've done, I accidentally killed Caden in the first one and continued my whole playthrough with that. Regretted it every single time I had to deal with Ashley in the later games. And then I was like, second playthrough, killing Ashley because fuck that bitch.
I kept her alive on one playthrough and then kept Caden alive on my next playthrough. And by the third game, when Ashley was working with the council as a specter, she was like, I did everything just right in the third game. I know it was a little bit forward, but she was able to take down Udina and protect the other council members. And they were like, he's like, what are you doing? She's like, yeah, this isn't going to work. This is wrong.
Yeah.
If Shepard's saying something, it's gotta be true.
Yeah. And other like fun fact about Caden is he's voiced by, I can't remember the voice actor's name, but it's the same guy who does Karth Onasi in the KOTOR games.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
Oh, dude.
That's definitely interesting.
We know how much I've played KOTOR. We know I know that voice. As soon as I heard it, it was just like the Leo meme. Hey. Yeah.
Do you like how in the second game you're able to do like the missions for each of your crewmates?
Yes.
So you can like quote unquote like befriend them. That way at the very end it makes things a lot more, I should say, easier.
Yes, absolutely. That was KOTOR 2 I like more than KOTOR 1 for that reason, because it's very much like you can gain influence over your party. So I love that in Mass Effect 2, is that like you can do these missions, you can get in better standing with your crewmates and stuff like that, and they carried that over into 3 as well. And I loved that.
Yeah.
Okay, before we start diving into 3, who's your love interest?
Tali.
Wrong. It's Liara. And you know I'm right.
No, it's definitely Tali.
I don't know what it is about that blue-skinned alien. I'm just like, girl, Miranda's fine, but damn, I could settle down with you.
Well, just think of what a certain character in the third game said about Asari, how they used to be little squids that swam in lakes and ponds back when he was at the height of his people's race.
Well, you know, his people made us think that they were some great civilization, but they were all just slavers, so fuck him.
That's true. They were pretty bad.
They were terrible. No, but that's another cool thing is the different love interests you can have. And I always pick Liara. And then in the second game, it's Miranda, just because why not? Just make it a little spicy. But it's by the end, it's always Liara. She's my number one.
Especially, I will give you credit, because if you do her story in the second game, Shadow Broker DLC. You'll help her become like your secret CIA / little spy agent that she that controls like the underworld of really the whole Milky Way.
Yeah, she's my all time favorite. I can't do the Tali thing. I just am like, listen, I don't know what you look like under that suit. You could be scary. I don't know. I'm like,
maybe she'll look. Maybe. Maybe Koryans, they look like Geth. I mean, I know we've seen her with two eyes, but maybe they're just like, just have no, maybe they have like a nose and no mouth.
You know what it is? It's like the flipper shaped feet. Like, you know how their feet are shaped? I think that's really what it is. I'm like, ugh.
It could be. Maybe some people, I don't know. I pick her every time. She's great.
Liara's personality. I'm like, her video game character, she's sexy and she's a sweetheart and she's kind of a badass down. I fucking love it.
She's also, I will give you credit, she's also like super smart. She knows like a lot of stuff and she's always willing to learn.
Oh yeah.
Especially when the events unfold in 3. Now, did you play the DLC in 2? Where it's like supposed to set up the third game, where you're supposed to get to a
relay.
Yeah, it's one of the relays, but I think it's supposed to slow down the Reaper invasion. It's like at the very edge of the Milky Way.
Yeah, it's in Batarian space. You have the choice of either leaving the relay and letting the Reapers come through faster or destroying it to slow down their progress. But in the process, you destroy several Batarian worlds. Kind of a dark thing. But yeah, I did play that. That was really good, actually.
I like how when you make the choice to destroy it, you have to get there really fast. Like you're like traveling like almost like at light speed, and you see it like getting closer and closer, and you have to destroy it, and you have to make this difficult call. Like, well, sorry, I know in 1 you kind of screw over the Batarians then, but now you're really screwing them.
Oh my god! Off. Well, but if you read the Codex, the Batarians fucking suck, dude. They're assholes. They're just scum.
Yeah, they're not. They're really not the best.
Not to be at all. Racist to some to made up species in the
xenophobic
galaxy. Yeah,
you don't want to be xenophobic,
but shit, I mean, you could read the lore and these guys suck.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're just one of those species that kind of just hate everybody. You're not a Batarian, like, you might as well just die at that point,
you know. Well, but 3, that's when everything pays off. All of the stakes.
Everything. That's when, like, in pretty much everything hits the fan. Mm-hmm. Everything. Now, I love how in the third game, it sets it up, like, you do the DLC. If you make the choice to destroy the relay, Shepard goes to prison. And, of course, it's
It's house arrest,
Earth,
essentially.
In London. Yeah, it's essentially on house arrest because A, he worked for Cerberus. B, he destroyed the relay. C, like, he risked lives of his pilot and crew, etc. And Anderson goes to get him, and I just love how when they're in the meeting, everybody just stops, and then, like, one of the Earth councilwoman, she's like, looks up, she's like, my god, and you see him just land. I'm like, oh, here we go. This is when everything is like where everything's on the line.
There is no easing into that third game. It's just run and gun. It's just like straight up, Reapers are here. We have to fucking deal with it. And you're just off and running. Anderson basically sends you on a mission because Earth was their primary target because of all the things that Shepard has done to stop them in the last several years of the games.
Right.
So they're like, fuck Earth. That's the first place we're going to go. And he's like, go unite the galaxy, basically. We can't do this alone. Nobody can do this alone. And that's like the whole premise of the game, which just leads to this insane payoff at the end. I mean, you learn so much about how the Protheans sucked via the DLC where you get the companion Jarek.
yeah Yeah, so, you learn a lot of like the Galaxy's Past from him, and it ain't good. What they were doing.
Yeah, and you just as you go, you learn about the fact that this is a site. Like, this is not the first time this has happened. It happened to us. It happened to the species that was the number one species in the galaxy before us. It is a constant cycle that repeats every 50,000 years that sentient species get to a certain stage, and then the Reapers come in to wipe it out and only leave like fledgling species around, like Neanderthals and things like that.
Right. When you saw, I guess you could say, like the spectral small child kind of running around, what did you think about that? Like creepy. When you were first playing 3.
Fucking yeah. Creepy. Dude. I mean,
yeah.
Like the whole thing, and it just that's the other payoff about the game, is just the weight of everything Shepard's had been through is just evident in that game.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It's all that trauma. And just having to deal with all those difficult choices he's had to make in the last few years just to like slow these guys down. And
yeah,
now they're here.
And then you learn about this device called the Crucible we believe it's a Prothean device that's been developed to destroy the Reapers. But we learn that the Protheans were just the last ones to possess the data, and that every cycle of species has worked on this device and tried to finish it as a way to destroy the Reapers. So every 50,000 years, that device would progress a little bit further. I mean, you do some crazy stuff in this game, especially with the Krogan. We haven't even touched on how the Krogan were basically just tools, and then they're like, oh, yeah, you know what? We don't need you anymore, so you can't have no babies.
Yeah, basically just a mass sterile operation, because everybody was like, well, if there's too many Krogan, then we're all going to die because, you know, they're really hard to kill. They're incredibly difficult to take down.
I mean,
it's true.
I mean, I always, always cure the Genophage.
Oh, I think a lot of people do. There's probably only a handful of people who don't, but those are the people who are just like, I'm just probably either A, getting an achievement, or B, they're just really cruel people.
Oh, fuck them.
So
I don't want to know them. Yeah, so like huge payoffs, and we can't even cover the entirety of the lore in this podcast. There's just no way. It would be several episodes. Excuse me.
Oh, definitely. Well, most games it would take 2 or plus episodes in general, but this one, there's so much going on and so much lore as a whole, and for a trilogy this big. What did you think of like the so-called processed beings? Like the beings that were like,
oh yeah, to make husks. Other Reapers?
Yeah, they were like the creepy. Husks or whatever.
Fucking creepy, dude. The whole like there's so many elements that are just disturbing about the series. Like husks are just basically once you get to the third game, you realize that for every species in the galaxy, the Reapers have a variant of it. Like,
yeah,
the Asari are like those creepy ass, like spectral
banshees.
Thank you. The Turians are the,
they actually combine the Turians and the Krogans into, I think they were like a juggernaut. Yeah. The Reapers were somehow able to like rewrite their xeno biology.
The genetic code or whatever it is.
Because like their acid makeup is completely different and not compatible, but the Reapers were able to kind of like synthesize a catalyst where the both acids could work. And you basically see a Krogan body with a Turian like head. Skull and then just like, yeah. And I'm like, I seen one of those for the first time. I'm like, what is that? I don't like that. That's not good.
I mean, it's just insane what they did, and like the amount of lore and the story they built into that game, into that trilogy. And I think that's why that trilogy is just regarded in such the way it is. And the payoff at the end, where your choices, like we talked about, really affect the outcome. Like in the third game, you have that whole galactic readiness thing. And
yep.
Unless you've made all the correct choices the entire way through, it is impossible to max that out. Now, I have, because on my second playthrough, I was this little snot, and I just went online. I'm like, what is the proper mission order, and what are the best choices, and all that stuff. But based on how ready the galaxy is, you get different endings. And whether you did Paragon or Renegade and all this other stuff. There's the destroy ending. There's the synthesize. There's like six different endings, and it's kind of crazy. And they lead to different credit scenes of how the galaxy fares. But there's one that's very hard to get. It's called the perfect destroy ending, and you basically have to almost entirely max out the galactic readiness to get this, because
yeah.
In every scenario, Shepard dies, like, permanently, except the perfect destroy ending. And in the perfect destroy ending, you figure out how to destroy the Reapers versus synthesize with them or let them do their thing and all this other stuff. But every scenario, Shepard dies, except for in the perfect destroy ending. You destroy the Reapers, and in the process, on the Crucible, everything's blown up around you, and in the last credit scene, it just flashes to Shepard's armor with air coming back into his chest.
Yep.
I mean, wild.
We get that. And everybody, I'm sure everyone who did get the perfect destroy ending, they were like, whoa, wait, what? And they were just like, is there going to be a fourth game? Is there going to be a quadrilogy to this whole series now?
Yeah. Before we move on to the next talking point, who's your favorite companion? Not love interest, companion. I think we both agree on
Garrus.
This. Hands down, Mr.
Garrus.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Like, different species, kind of ugly looking. I'm still like, it's got that Ryan Reynolds Jensen Ackles effect, man. Damn.
I particularly like him because just about every mission, I will take him on unless it's like... obviously, I don't have the option to take him with. Because like, you'd be like, hey, Garrus, you want to go? Can it wait? I'm in the middle of some calibrations. I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll go ask Grunt or Tally or Liara or somebody. And then in three, we get Edie.
Amazing.
And like an android.
Amazing list of companions. Like, top tier, best list of companions in any game, hands down. On top of an amazing story, great fighting. Great action. I mean, the game is damn near perfect.
The third one is definitely, in my opinion, the apex. Like, yes. They set everything up very well to get this trilogy solid and well done. And everyone who's played it and finished it will agree that it's literally the best game out of the whole trilogy. I mean, some people will say it's two, but
a lot of people say it's
personally
two.
Like three.
I've heard a lot of people say it's two. I think it's three myself. But, you know, shortly, a few years after that, so in 2018, they released another Mass Effect game, and that was not part of the story we just played, called Andromeda. And the basis of that game was all the species in the galaxy basically came together a sect of them came together and for this mission to go explore our nearest neighboring galaxy, the Andromeda Galaxy. So this takes place, everyone's thrown in stasis, and 600 years later, they wake up in the Andromeda Galaxy. Now, I'm not going to go in, I don't want to go into details of this game, but universally, this game is considered a flop.
Yeah.
And
yeah. It's sad. Set up. It is sad because They had set up a really good trilogy, and then when they make this fourth game, an offshoot game, I played it, and I'm just like, this is not what I was hoping.
Now, it's not to say that the game overall was terrible.
It's not. It's lacking. It's definitely lacking what the trilogy had.
When you compare it to what came before, it's just not the same. Like, there's the classes, there's biotics, there's that kind of stuff. There's Krogan, there's Turian, there's Asari, there's that stuff. But doesn't have the story, it doesn't have the lore, it has boring characters, and it focuses so much on exploration because it doesn't have all that other stuff. In theory, yep. the game's a great concept, and I like the combat system and things like that. However, like, the lore, it just falls flat on its face because of how good the games before it were.
Yep. Yep. Although I will give it credit that even though the trilogy holds up well, you have to admit that Andromeda's graphics, exploration, as well as the look of the game is still really beautiful.
Oh, absolutely. Never going to take that away. Like I said, Andromeda could have been better, and where it could have been better was in story and lore. And I get it was yeah. a game about exploration, but when you have such a story-driven game series, and then you do that, it doesn't hold up at all.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest reason. Not to say the game's terrible, but by comparison to the other games, it's not good.
Yeah. Yeah, it is sorely lacking, and it is unfortunate that it did not live up to the potential of its predecessor.
Yeah. But on a high note, it was just announced last year that Mass Effect we're returning to the Milky Way with Mass Effect in what is being referred to as 4-5, because we don't know if it's going to be Mass Effect 4 or it's going to be Mass Effect 5 because of Andromeda existing. And holy shit, I am so pumped.
When you saw this, I assume it probably dropped at E3.
I don't remember. I just saw the trailer online.
Okay, so when you saw the trailer on YouTube or wherever you had seen it, what did you think after watching it?
And what did you think? Shepherd's back.
And what did you think before you go into detail? What did you think before you watched it? Do you think, oh, this is probably just some nonsense trailer that someone just had a little extra time and just threw together?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I thought too. Until a friend of mine told me, he's like, oh no, this is legit. This is a legit trailer. And after I watched it, I'm like,
it's a teaser. It's a teaser. Go with this.
Yeah. It's definitely a teaser.
But it was, I saw the trailer and it was within a day or two of the release that I saw it. And then the voice actor who plays Liara confirmed that the Asari we see in the trailer is Liara and that she has been asked to come back and voice her. So we're getting Liara back, and knowing that Asari live 1,000 years could be interesting. That being said, if you look at the poster that was released with this, there's a lot of Easter eggs in it. And BioWare themselves has said there's at least 5 to 6 Easter eggs hidden within this poster. And based on the trailer and the poster, you see a Krogan and 4 other people. So you instantly have a Krogan and an Asari. So we have Liara, and then we either have Grunt or Rex. Now, I believe it's Rex, because if you go look at this poster, there's a red sheen to the Krogan.
Yeah, so right now I'm looking at this image, and it definitely looks like, yeah, you can definitely tell that one of them is a Krogan, and I'm really hoping it's Rex.
Oh, yeah.
Because Rex, next to Grunt, Rex is still my favorite, especially doing all of his missions and helping the Krogan species as a whole on T'Chunka. Doing that whole quest line in 3 was so cool. Yeah. Especially, I love this scene too, especially including when you help Tali and that Geth defector. I can't remember his
Legion.
Name. You know, Legion, thank you. When you go to their homeworld or their new picked homeworld. I love how when you are both on those worlds, you absolutely body or use any means necessary to body a Reaper. And this is like one of those smaller ones. Mm-hmm. There's not like the Dreadnought.
It's not a class. Sovereign class, yeah.
Yeah. And I just love how this giant worm picks up this Reaper and throws it to the ground like it's nothing. And it sit there and it's trying to struggle to get up. And I'm just like, that's what you get. That's what you get. You inferior machine.
So if you look at this poster right here, there's something that stands out. It's, you're in a crater, and the crater looks oddly like a Geth.
Yeah.
And now this we're going to talk a little bit about the fact that Shepard survived. That makes it so that the canon ending has to be the perfect destroy ending in order for him to survive. And if the Geth play a huge role, that ties into the predictions that were made at the end of Mass Effect 3, that no matter what you do, AI and sentient life will always be at each other's throats. So it leads me to believe that even though peace was made with the Geth, it's now reaching a stage where they're a problem again, because they are AI and they realize they are better than sentient.
Right.
So I think that's where we're heading in this game again.
Now, do you think that with the how things ended with Tali's quest and with Legion, do you think that do you think Tali would be almost like a pivotal focus in some parts of this story? Yeah, it's hard to tell.
I'm going to only speculate on the things that I can speculate on. Like, that's one I can't. Like I said, I feel like we can basically, oh, there's a cat. basically guarantee that Liara's there. They've hinted that Shepard's still alive. They've all but confirmed Shepard's still alive, which makes the perfect destroy ending canon.
Right.
So I feel like that's where we're heading, and I'm stoked because the Shepard storyline was unreal. Now, I was watching a YouTube video the other night, and it was talking about the new Mass Effect game. And he referenced that on the BioWare's store, you can buy a lithograph of the new poster. And in the video, the description had a lot of what I would call spoilers. And so I went onto the site today, and that description has since been changed. But in it, the description that's in that YouTube video, I'll probably put a link to that in this episode, in this episode description. It states that the relays are destroyed, the Citadel is destroyed, and Earth is in ruins. So
interesting.
This is going to be a wild game, and I think it's going to be about piecing this galaxy back together. Shepard is going to do it again. He's going to bring us all together.
How do you think it'll start?
And you, I don't
like,
know.
If you had to guess, okay. I was going to say, if you had...
Actually, I have my guess. It's going to start with the debris from the Citadel having traveled through space because gravitational pulls and stuff like that.
Yep.
Has been pulled to different parts of the galaxy or things, or it crashed on Earth somewhere. And I have this feeling that because the galaxy is in such shambles, Liara or whoever in the crew has been leading the quest to find Shepard's remains. And or find out if he's alive or whatnot. And that it's been a while, like maybe a couple years since the last game. And that's what sets it up that, oh, we need Shepard. He's the only one that can bring the galaxy back together. And there's rumors that he's alive. Because it wouldn't be... After everything he went through, I wouldn't put it past him to just go, deuces, I've done my part.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I think for me, it'll start out as it'll have a cutscene showing like the Citadel, like what are pieces of it, kind of like lodged in the landscape on Earth.
Yeah.
And just cities are completely decimated. And you can see like the different Asari, Earth, Salarian, and Turian and Corian ships in orbit, and like just, you know, you see them walking around and like helping people, like humans, pick up like rubble off of the ground and helping people out. And you can kind of see like Anderson and a few other characters like Ashley and other members of the crew kind of like, you know, working. And then like, oh, we found maybe possibly where Shepard is. And then that'll like be, it'll start off the game like right then and there.
Yeah.
It'll have like a galactic map and it'll be like, the galactic map will show like parts of the galaxy that are heavily affected and not as affected. Yeah. So.
Could be interesting. A couple other notes that I think are really cool. So Andromeda was done in BioWare's game engine, the Frostbite engine, which is an engine they developed. And that's what Dragon Age Inquisition was done in and things like that. And Anthem, which was a total flop that we won't talk about.
Nope.
But they're going back to the Unreal Engine for the new Mass Effect game.
Yes. That'll be really good to see in its Unreal Engine.
Yes.
And if you, those who are listening, if you want to comment on your thoughts on if you think they should go back to the Unreal Engine or Frostbite, tell us why.
Oh, I'm 100% for Unreal. Like, Frostbite's cool, don't get me wrong, but Unreal looks better. In my opinion, it's just what I am used to, I should say. One of the last things I want to talk about, and I think this is a proof that they want to do this game justice, is Mass Effect, the original trilogy, is 100% story-driven. And they actually had a pretty big hire to be the head of the story department for the new Mass Effect game. And that was, and I'm going to pronounce her last name wrong because that's what I do. Mary DeMarlay or DeMarle, I can't pronounce it. Anywho, she was the head of the narrative for Deus Ex, Humans Revolutions, and Guardians of the Galaxy, and has received wide praise for her parts in those games. So, for me, that's a huge, huge sign that they know what they're doing, because I think BioWare has had enough flops in the last few years that they need to get back to what they're good at, and that is story-driven RPG games.
I played a little bit of the Guardians of the Galaxy game. I haven't really played too much of it. It's actually really fun, and it's a really good game. Thus far, I've probably played like 20 minutes of it, of its opening, and I think it's good. I think it's really good.
Yeah. For me, high hopes for the new game. Seems like they're trying to make the steps to right the ship. And I mean, obviously it's a few years away, probably at least 3 years away, but I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah. I look forward to it as well, but I absolutely think that BioWare should definitely take their time. Mm-hmm. No rush. Like, really iron out all the details and try to avoid what you did with Anthem.
And the same thing was not good. And the same thing's happening with Dragon Age, the Dreadwolf, which is the new edition, the newest iteration there. There have been a lot of hiccups and stuff like that. They were trying to rush it, and I'm concerned for that game, but it sounds like they're starting to get that one kind of figured out. But this one, I feel like they know they have to treat well, because they saw how bad Andromeda did. And then they did so poorly with Anthem that they have to be like, we have to get the magic back. And this is the game we do it with.
Yep. I agree. I definitely agree. Is there anything you want to add before we wrap this up?
No, not at all.
Okay. All right. Well, today, this was our first segment of the Game Corner. For those who are listening to Dorkside Nexus on Instagram or Twitter, and our very own new Reddit page, which we're starting to work out the finer details of, and we'll get there at some point. And we will let you know when we do. Definitely comment on a game that you'd like for us to talk about in the future. And definitely let us know if it's something that Tanner, myself, or even Corey can play and give it a shot.
All right, guys. This has been the first episode of Papa Palpatine's Game Corner. Be sure to find us on Instagram, Reddit, Twitter, Facebook. We're not super active on Facebook, most active on Twitter. But thanks for listening, guys. And as always, stay hydrated out there.
Wear your seatbelt. Stop before you go. Look both ways. And
drive fast, take chances.
Don't do that. Don't listen to Tanner with that type of advice. That's a no bueno.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. We'll catch you next time, and we'll see you here in the Nexus.